Show.
Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A really, no kidding, live program on this, the 23rd day of May, 2013. Goodness gracious. I'm trying to do a little math in my, on the fly in my head. There's not a fly in my head. I'm trying to do math in my head on the fly. Obviously, we're already having language difficulties this evening. My grandfather would be 119 years old today. Born May the 23rd, 1894. That is 119, isn't it? Yeah. Happy birthday, Granddad. Mind-blowing. Now... let me see if I can explain this. I had told you last night that there would be no show this evening. But there is one. Except for the fact that, something's not working right. Okay, we'll have to try this again. And let's see if we can make the magic work. Yes, it is working. All right, so nobody heard the opening there. Well, it'll be on the podcast. You didn't miss much. Okay, yeah. Yeah, I'm here now. Wonderful. Thank you, Sparky. Welcome to this Thursday, the 23rd of May, live broadcast. Toward the end of the program last night, I had told you that I would not be here because apparently Senator Manchin was supposed to be on a listening tour all around almost level West Bicod, Virginia, and it was my county's turn this evening. So I was planning on going over there and having a little chit-chat with him about the fact that he supports the ongoing poisoning of his own constituents via mountaintop removal and all the associated toxicity that comes with it. Then I found out, no, in fact, Joe was not going to be here in our lovely county, that he was sending some of his flax. Well, you can talk to flax just about any time you want to. So I took a pass. I only found that out, however, a fairly short time ago, which means, in turn, that there hasn't just been a whole hell of a lot of show prep done today. I mean, that's just the honest truth. So this may be a complete and total unmitigated disaster. But I've done some, and I'm ready for some, but this provides a bit of a unique opportunity, if you will, for you to drive the bus, if you wish. Got something you want to bring to the table? Well, we're kind of wide open this evening. There are some obvious choices, some things we can take a run at. The speech that President Obama delivered today about our foreign misadventures being one of them. The story out of the UK about the beheading on the street is deeply horrifying, isn't it? But we're not we give President Not Sure a pretty hard time on any given day, and it's not without reason. But in essence, did you hear what I heard today? Talk of winding down the global war on terror that never should have been in the first place, because you can't make war on an abstract noun. There's that. Of course, there was a bit of drama in the speech today as Medea Benjamin interrupted to yell at the president. And to his credit, and just a general reminder of how different this country is, markedly and measurably so, from one administration to the next, she herself would be on her way to Guantanamo Bay by now if this had happened under the dim leader administration. She didn't just yell one thing and then get dragged out or, don't tase me, bro, or any of that. No. She actually had a back and forth with President Obama, who, to his credit, didn't appear ruffled or rattled. He would try to speak, and she would interrupt, and he would listen, and then he'd try to speak, and she'd interrupt some more, and he'd listen, and then he'd try to speak, and she'd interrupt some more, and but she wasn't dragged out and waterboarded. And in the course of the speech, the thing that struck me as being important is the notion that maybe we can see a light at the end of the terror tunnel, where everything is a reason to go blow up brown people. And that would be nice, wouldn't it? Maybe Ms. Benjamin, for whom I have considerable respect, can now take her questioning, to say, how about her buddy Rand Paul's office? Because Rand Paul hates him some terrorists. And after all, they're pals now. She took him chocolates and roses and talked about how large his how large she thought his testicles are. So maybe they can have because getting a little cooperation out of the Republican Party would be handy in this instance, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it? So there's that. And there's that to be addressed, if you wish. But other things as well. We're finding more and more and more out about Virginia's new Luton governor candidate, E.W. Jackson, whom I think we will now just shorten to UJ. E.W.J. We'll just call him UJ. Who will not, he says, will not apologize for any of the hateful crap that he spews, because he's entitled to spew hateful crap, quote, because I'm a Christian. Yeah. Uje. I think it works. At least it works for me. So we've got that. We have this is Thorn in the Side Thursday, remember. We have some hypocrisy on parade. No, really? From a Republican? Absolutely. And a couple of those little stories that just sort of hide back in the niches of our consciousness that don't look like something at first, but the more you look at it, the more it looks like something. In this case, having to do with, really, oh, just the photograph makes me shudder, cockroaches. Yuck. And a question, you know, we had a very nice note last night from our buddy Scott in Sweden. And, of course, Scott doesn't listen live. He listens later via the podcast. So maybe at some point we will get a little on-the-ground reporting from Scott, obviously conjuring him, on what's going on in Stockholm. Because there have been five straight nights of considerable civil unrest, cars being torched and so forth, in the areas of Stockholm that are largely inhabited by immigrants. And apparently the authorities there are looking for more, or expecting more violence and civil unrest in coming days. A couple of nights ago, there were 90 separate fires started. Cars, restaurants, the story I'm looking at merely says, and it's an Agence France-Presse report, the troubles are believed to have been triggered by the fatal police shooting of a 69-year-old Husby resident last week after the man wielded a machete in public. The man then fled to his apartment where police have said they tried to mediate but ended up shooting him dead in what they claimed was self-defense. Local activists said the shooting sparked anger among youths who claimed to have suffered from police brutality. During the first night of rioting, they said police had called them tramps, monkeys, and Negroes. I hate to hear stories like this coming out of a place like Stockholm. And I admit that there's probably a little bit of elitism and snobbery in me when I say that I expect this of other places. But riots in Stockholm are not something that riots and Stockholm are not two words that one usually feels the need to use in conjunction. But there we are. So there's that. And, yeah, the cockroach story. And then, I want to get back to Uje. Because because he's only one state over from me, and I drive through the Old Dominion rather frequently these days, going to and from Washington, D.C. to work on the ACAC. And I just wonder, I just wonder if this guy, this cleric, this fundamentalist freak, I wonder if he's got a shot, a chance, a possibility of becoming Lieutenant Governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia. Virginia can be a very scary place politically. I think I read somewhere that at one point in time, and it may still be persisting, at one point in time, the Old Dominion had the highest level of black illiteracy in the country. And that was, of course, by design. In the history of this country, there is a story in the life of William Henry Seward, you know, Lincoln's Secretary of State, there's a story of him going to visit friends in the South and having to pass through Virginia, and the poverty and the misery and the agony that he saw in that slaveholding hellhole made him call his trip short and go back home to New York as quickly as he possibly could, where he became more than ever convinced that slavery had to be ended. There is a legacy there. And so along comes Ujay, and he has himself a Twitter account, and he's another one of those right-wingers who's made himself famous by saying hateful, outrageous things. I mean, this guy's one step away from full-on membership in the Westboro Baptist Church, okay? Going back to 2009, he tweeted, "The president has proclaimed June as Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Pride Month. Well, that just makes me feel icky all over. Yuck." Why? Was he under the misapprehension that he had to go out and become lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender all at once in June of 2009? Or is it just that his Christian heart is filled with snakes and spiders and creepy, crawly, awful things? Probably being a little rough on snakes. He also tweeted, "If Bill Clinton was the first black president, Barack Obama is the first homosexual president based on their respective affinities." Remember, Harvard gave this guy a degree. It was 2.5 years ago when he tweeted, "By allowing open homosexuality, liberals have made clear that they are their own gods with their own morality." Does that even mean? This Christian president, he put Christian in scare quotes, believes homosexuality is right and the Bible is wrong. He thinks he's president of Sodom and Gomorrah, or he'd like to be. This is the mild stuff. Then there's this. I mean, If you live in the Commonwealth of Virginia and you're gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered, whatever, shouldn't you maybe be out just banging on every door that you can find saying, this guy needs to be in government, about as much as pick your analogy. The homosexual movement is a cancer attacking vital organs of faith, family, and military, repositories of traditional values. Gay people, you got that? Gay people are a cancer. There's your civil dialogue. And, of course, the Nazi Tourette's kicks in sooner or later. It was the 26th of February, 2010, when he tweeted, Tony Perkins...
Norman?
Yes, Mother Bates. Tony Perkins was disinvited as speaker at Andrews AFB because he opposed Obama promoting open homosexuality in the military. This the Gestapo, question mark? No, UJ. This not the Gestapo. This America. Let's see, opposed hate crimes legislation. Did you know that Obama appointed two devout Muslims to the Homeland Security Department? Email me. I'll forward it. I don't want to email you, UJ. Okay, so previously he referred to him as the first gay president. Let's see, Frank Gaffney, Washington Times, wrote an excellent article on Obama and Islam. First Muslim president? Check it out. He's so hip. CHK. Check it out. There's a pile of this filth. I do not believe Obama is the Antichrist. Well, how nice for you. But Christians who follow Obama would probably follow the Antichrist. Are they Christians? And for just plain enigmatic weirdness, this, and this goes back to 2009. He was apparently very busy in 2009. Little lesson here for UJ. The internet does not forget. I love America. I love God. I am black. Obama does not love America and does not love God. His being black is not enough. Anybody? Really? Anybody want to take a run at that? What is the... I mean, I read it. It sounds like English to me, but it doesn't mean like English to me. I love America. I love God. I am black. Is this some rather pathetic attempt at a syllogism? It's silly. Obama does not love America and does not love God. His being black is not enough. I don't know. Is UJ working on a book, Not Black Like Me? It tells you a hell of a lot about the Republican Party, that they would allow a clown like this anywhere. There was a time, this is not race based. This is brains based and sanity based. There was a time when there was a Republican Party in America that would not let this man even on the ballot for dog catcher. I'm going to baptize him before we put him down. I love America. I love God. I am black. Nope, so start. Still doesn't make any sense. Admittedly, for anybody willing to face the truth, Obama's radical anti-American, anti-Christian ideology was apparent. Are Obama and his administration anti-Semitic? They bow and shake hands with every two-bit dictator. Yeah, that's the Emperor of Japan, two-bit dictator. But feel the need to come down on Israel? I wish we'd had Twitter back when George W. Bush was putting wet sloppies all over the face of the what's his the king of Saudi Arabia and going walking hand holding through the bluebells. Here's a reference to Obama's Marxist brigade. Now, and then this little precious piece. I don't like to name call, except for everything we've just read, but you have to be a disloyal idiot to stand with a foreign leader condemning your own country and citizens. Obama and comrades, remember, he doesn't like to name call. Obama and comrades are totalitarianists. Their unholy alliance will destroy this country if we let them. Uprising in 2010. Holy. And he's also a climate change denier. Obama was apparently suppressing a report debunking the global warming hysteria. Transparency? Sure, like an Iron Curtain. And remember, he won't apologize for any of this because he is a Christian. Because if anybody wanted him to apologize, that would be persecution. Well, the thing is, this guy is not some sort of fringe element. That's a mainstream, mainline, garden variety, second decade of the 21st century version of the Republican. That's just what they are now. And it's... shiver-inducing. That's the word. That's what I was looking for. Yeah, it'll give you the creeps. And it's not just, you know, it's not just one. It's not just Ujay. Ujay just happens to be a particularly creepy manifestation of that right now. No, there's more. Having announced that he's not going to run for re-election in Georgia, Senator Saxby Chambliss, who morphed the face of Max Cleland, a decorated multiple amputee Vietnam veteran, morphed his face into the face of Osama bin Laden in a campaign ad, while at the same time noting that Saxby, could not go to Vietnam because of football knee, football brain, pilondial cyst, all the good draft spots were taken. What? One of those things. His name is bruited about these days as being one of those reasonable Republicans that you can actually have a conversation with. roof. Here it is. Here's what passes for reasonable in the Republican Party. In regard to President Obama's call for an end to the perpetual war on terror, Saxby felt compelled to put out a press release. The president's speech today will be viewed by terrorists as a victory. Rather than continuing successful counterterrorism activities, we are changing course with no clear operational benefit. We knew 5 years ago that closing Guantanamo was a bad idea and would not work. Yet today's speech sends the message to Guantanamo detainees that if they harass the dedicated military personnel there enough, we'll give in and send them home, even to Yemen. With the recidivism rate now at 28% and the increased threat from Al-Qaeda and its affiliates, including in Yemen, Gitmo must stay open for business. There you go. There's your reasonable Republican. What a choice piece of work. Then he went running looking for a camera to jump in front of after he issued his statement. Well, here it is.
Thanks, Senator McCain. John and I have a little slight difference of opinion about Guantanamo Bay. I have been one to advocate maintaining Guantanamo Bay, and my reason's pretty simple. If we were to capture some of the Benghazi terrorists who...
Oh, wait, there's Aunt Pity Pat Graham Cracker back behind. Well, if John McCain's somewhere, Lindsay's not. Got to be somewhere.
We know today are running free. What are we going to do with them?
Now, wait a minute. What's this hyper-pathetical situation?
We were to capture some of the Benghazi terrorists who we know today are running free. What are we going to do with them? We have no place to take them. We're going to bring them into an Article 3 court? Are we going to trust the Libyans to prosecute them? What's going to happen to them? That's just one simple question. The other one is, we've got 166 of the meanest, nastiest killers in the world located at Guantanamo Bay today. What the president said is that we're going to move towards closure, and that means...
I had no idea there was a Republican club at Guantanamo. 166 of the meanest, nastiest killers in the world. Go figure.
It's a release of presumably 86 of those individuals that have already been authorized for transfer, but they were not transferred because a number of them were going to Yemen. 56 of them are Yemenis. And following the 2009 Christmas Day bomber incident, all transfers to Yemen were stopped because we didn't have confidence that the Yemeni government could handle them. Well, guess what? Between December 2009 and today, has Yemen shown any indication that they're more capable of looking after those individuals? Absolutely not. And if we were to transfer those individuals to Yemen, we'd be just like turning them loose. And I just don't think that's the right thing to do. We've got state-of-the-art facilities at Guantanamo.
Because remember, everybody at Guantanamo is guilty, or else they wouldn't be there, right? I mean, there's nobody at Guantanamo Bay who's been held for years and years without charge or trial because there's nothing to charge them with or try them over. I mean, that's not happening down there. That, you know, it's just, they're 166 of the meanest, most hateful killers in the world, and they're willing to starve themselves to death just because they hate America. What a clueless. Oh, but do go on, Saxby.
Guantanamo, we should try the individuals that are at Guantanamo today in the courtrooms at Guantanamo, then make a decision on what to do with them after.
What about the ones that don't have charges against them? What about the ones who are simply there because their neighbor one scree-filled valley over dropped the dime on them so that they could get their sheep or goats or whatever? Because, you know, that happened. It really did. It happened. We provided a convenient way to work out some ancient hatreds and a little vendetta here and a little revenge there. And did you hear him say we should try them? Try them for what, Saxby? We've already rendered the word Kafkaesque practically meaningless with all of this. Try them for what? Well, he doesn't really know, does he? No, he doesn't.
Is at Guantanamo, we should try the individuals that are at Guantanamo today in the courtrooms at Guantanamo, then make a decision on what to do with them after that. The other issue I want to...
Even if we got to try them for stream littering or not looking twice before they cross the street or the Article 99A, because you're a Muslim, or we need to try them for something. You know, in Georgia, we know how to treat people like that. Yeah, look at that Troy Davis. He was innocent, and we killed his ass anyway. See, that's how it's supposed to work. We don't like you, so we're going to kill you. Because that's America.
Touch briefly on that the president talked about is the transparency that he now wants to see in the drone program. He was limited in what he said on the program, so obviously I can only be limited in what I say about it.
Well, and you're also limited by the fact that you're not exactly operating with a brain between your ears, but we're cutting. This is slack cutting Thursday, Saxby, so continue.
Suffice it to say that in the case of Anwar al-Awlaki, we had complete transparency that was given to the American public and was given to Congress. Congress knew exactly what was going on with respect to the targeting of al-Awlaki. And that's the type of transparency that I think is appropriate.
And we had transparency, and I said, you know what, I don't care if he's an American or not. He's a Muslim, ain't he? Bring him down to Georgia. Don't waste that drone money on him. We'll just string him up in the tree in the night, you know, have a few night riders out there in white sheets and pillowcases. We'll just string his ass up. American citizen, my ass. I don't care if he's no American citizen. We got us some transparency. I got your transparency. We'd just line him up against the fence row and shoot him so full of holes, he'd be as transparent as hell.
But to open the book, so to speak, on the drone program, I think does not make America a safer place in which to live. With that...
You got this? He hates him some Obama, and says Obama's what'd that press release say? Today's speech sends the message to Guantanamo detainees that if they harass the dedicated military personnel there enough, we will give in and send them home. If they harass the military personnel, no shoes. Blaze orange pajamas, and what they're doing. You got that? Being so sick am tired of being unjustly imprisoned, that you simply give up the will to live. In this sociopath's mind, that equates with harassing the people who have the guns. Apparently, Saxby Chambliss has had, in fact, his final hearing in the divorce proceedings that he's had with Reality. What kind of desperation attends the decision to simply give up and die? What little slice of hell must life be like to want to not participate in it anymore? To awaken in the morning and realize that as far out as one can project, one's reality is going to be a square room, blaze orange pajamas, the blazing heat of the tropical sun of Cuba, people with guns and dogs and razor wire. Even if you haven't done anything, to have that done to you. When a man against whom there are no charges, and for whom there can be no trial because there is no allegation of wrongdoing, who is simply warehoused at Guantanamo Bay, for him to refuse to eat food and be strapped into a chair and forcibly have a nasogastric tube run up his nose and down his throat and into his stomach and to be pumped full of Ensure or God knows what against his will, in Saxby Chambliss's world, that is harassing the dedicated military personnel. What can you even say about that kind of thinking? I think we can say that Saxby Chambliss is morally bankrupt, that whatever whatever he had in the way of a soul died a long time ago. Because, you know, that hunger strike, that's about being mean to the people with the guns who've waterboarded and tortured and tormented. Yeah. Jeremy with a note. Bob, it's happening again. I need that ball, that tennis ball, and the strong, strong, strong tape. Gorilla tape. I wish someone would throw a sack on this POS and take him down to Guantanamo and let him hang out there for years without a trial or a reason. not to mention most of the men being held at Guantanamo are cleared to be released. Jesus, these freaks make me sick to my stomach. And, of course, it gets even worse when you realize it's being done in your name. Our names. Dear God. So you see where this is going to lead, right? Whatever it was that Barack Obama said today, whatever mild, tepid attempt he'd like to make, it will be vigorously opposed. Because, see, in the let's understand something about the Republican mind. They like torture. They like anger. Here's tonight's first obligatory Star Trek reference. They're like that creature in the one episode who fed off human fear. That's them. That's the reality. And they don't want to see anything get in the way of their sadistic delight in the agony of others. They can't even comprehend the concept that somebody who is innocent of anything, any connection to terrorism, shouldn't be tortured. Well, he's a Muslim. We've got him. We should probably just torture him on principle. Because then he can go back and he can tell them, hey, you don't want to screw with America because I wasn't even guilty of nothing and they tortured me. Imagine what they'd do if you'd done something. It's monstrous. Two people are on that hunger strike at Guantanamo. 102 people have given up on life, have given up on humanity, have given up on the universe. They're trying to get out of their participation in the universe. That is chilling. It's terrifying to think about, isn't it? And we made them be like that. Nobody was, taxi driver for Osama bin Laden or any of that. None of that. Tough to swallow. Tough indeed. So that is at least a starting point for the evening. We will close this Thorn in the Side Thursday filibobster and open the phone lines to you if you want to participate, if you've got something on your mind, another story, anything. You're welcome to jump right in. And by the way, huge thanks to Greg, who single-handedly took care of tonight's fundraising. It is profoundly appreciated. Thank you very much. All of this is... you're the reason this is able to continue. And don't think for a moment that that doesn't just... well, it's past thankfulness and it's past amazement. It's a beautiful little expression of the fact that we can, when we try, build communities of decency where we can have conversations outside the screaming of the right-wing media landscape, where we can create a safe place to carry on our discussions. Thank you, one and all. And thank you, Greg, for doing tonight. So it is Thursday, and that means that we have the Green News Report coming up from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. And after that, who knows, round and round it goes, and where it stops, nobody knows. Is the number to reach the program on Skype. Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. Any way you care to reach out. Bob Kincaid on Facebook, at Bob Kincaid on Twitter, and BobKincaid@gmail.com. is the email address. We will be back. We'll be back after this break. I'm Bob Kincaid.
A warrior from the land of the midnight sun, with a Thompson gun for hire, fighting to be done. The deal was made in Denmark on a dark and stormy day, so he set out for Biafra to join the bloody fray. Through 66 and 7 they fought the Congo on their triggers, knee-deep in gore. Days and nights they battled the Bantu to their knees. They killed to earn their living and to help out the Congolese. Poland, the Thompson gunner. Poland, the Thompson gunner. Comrades fought beside him, Van Owen and the rest. But of all the Thompson gunners, Roland was the best. So the CIA decided they wanted Roland dead. That son of a bitch, Van Owen, blew off Roland's head. Roland, the headless Thompson gunner. They can still see his headless body stalking through the night in the muzzle flash of Roland's Thompson gun. In the muzzle flash of Roland's Thompson gun. Roland searched the continent for the man who done him in. He found him in Mombasa, in a barroom drinking gin. Roland aimed his Thompson gun, he didn't say a word, but he blew out Owen's body from Daily Johannesburg. Roland the headless Thompson gunner, Roland the headless Thompson gunner, Roland the headless Thompson gunner, talking about the man. Roland the headless Thompson gunner. Thompson gunner, still wandering through the night. Now it's 10 years later, but he still keeps up the fight. In Ireland, in Lebanon, in Palestine, in Berkeley, Paddy Hearst heard the burst of a Roland's Thompson gun and body.
It's Thursday, May 23, 2013.
We come across a bill here where, in fact, it's an earmark for a foreign oil corporation.
House Republicans vote again to expedite Keystone XL pipeline.
I am not interested in debating what's not debatable.
Meet your new energy secretary. Oklahoma tornado, the second costliest in U.S. history. New rules for fracking on public lands, plus...
It can charge very quickly, and it can last for 10,000 cycles compared to batteries, which are only like 1,000 cycles.
California teen invents a battery that could charge your cell phone in 20 seconds.
All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
According to a new study, those who use marijuana are slimmer.
No, not that kind of green news report. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, you've got a lot to cover, so I'm going to do both you and the listeners a favor and shut up and toss it straight over to you.
Okay.
What do you have for us today?
Well, the preliminary damage estimates for the Moore, Oklahoma tornado on Monday, which was rated an EF5, the maximum, now stand at $2 billion. Remember, that's just preliminary. That would make it the second costliest tornado in U.S. history, and that's because it hit a populated area. It's second only to the Joplin, Missouri tornado in 2011. In the wake of the fertilizer plant explosion in West Texas that killed 15 people, a new analysis shows that at least 800,000 Americans across the United States live near hundreds of sites that store large amounts of potentially explosive ammonium nitrate. That's the chemical fertilizer ingredient that was blamed for the West Texas blast.
But people shouldn't worry because those plants are inspected more than once every 20 years or so, like the one in Texas, right?
Nope, they are not. You can check out if you are one of the lucky Duckies at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. Lots of energy politics news on Capitol Hill this week.
A bill that deems that the environmental impact statement required by the National Environmental Policy Act is deemed approved. It's not. While we're at it, why don't we deem world peace? It's not our job to deem things. It's our job to pass laws of general application, not favors to foreign oil companies.
That was Democratic Representative Alan Grayson of Florida excoriating majority House Republicans on Wednesday for passing legislation to override President Obama's authority and approve the northern leg of the controversial proposed Keystone XL pipeline from Canada for the seventh time. The bill also contains numerous other provisions that would limit legal challenges to the pipeline and strip the executive branch of other authority and enforcement over it. Passage is unlikely in the Senate, and even if it did pass, Obama has promised to veto. But interestingly, a new poll shows that after years of debate over the Keystone XL pipeline, half of Americans have never heard of it. Of those that have heard of it, 2/3 support building the project.
So most Americans are uninformed or misinformed. Great.
On Wednesday, nuclear physicist Ernest Moniz was sworn in as the new Secretary of Energy for the United States after a unanimous confirmation vote in the Senate. In his first remarks as Energy Secretary, Moniz says climate change science is not debatable.
So let me make it very clear. There is no ambiguity in terms of the scientific basis calling for a prudent response on climate change. I am not interested in debating what's not debatable.
I love that. Would he have been confirmed 97-0 had he said that during the confirmation hearing?
That's a good question. We do know that Republicans in the Senate like him because he supports nuclear energy, being a nuclear physicist, and also because he supports the controversial natural gas drilling technique of fracking. But that's if safety rules are strict and are enforced.
Yeah, well, they thought they loved him. Maybe not so much now. Also, any word on the confirmation of the new EPA administrator?
No, Gina McCarthy is still on hold by Republicans.
And my prediction from months ago is still valid, that it will be impossible for this Congress to approve a new administrator for the EPA, but we'll see.
Speaking of fracking, the Interior Department released new draft rules for fracking on public lands. The draft rules set new standards for safe well construction and for wastewater disposal, and require the industry to publicly disclose the chemicals they use in hydraulic fracturing operations.
That's good.
Yes, but environmental groups criticized these new draft rules, saying they're significantly weakened after industry input, and that the designated website for the disclosures, which is called Frack Focus, is funded and operated by the industry and is near impossible to use.
Oh, great. Very nice. What a surprise.
Finally,
the supercapacitor I have developed uses a special nanostructure which allows for a lot greater energy per unit volume.
Isha Kahar is the California teenager who invented a new mini battery with the potential to charge your cell phone in 20 seconds or less. She says it's actually a supercapacitor rather than a battery, but she only won second place at the Intel International Science and Engineering Fair.
I love that story. Charge your cell phone in 20-30 seconds, and its application to electric cars, hello, has...
It could be amazing.
Yeah, has Elon Musk of Tesla called her yet?
I don't know.
Thanks for ending on a happy note for a change. For more on that and the other stories we couldn't cover today, please see our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider donating to help sponsor the Green News Report. We rely on you. Please help us do what the corporate media ain't. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyle.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I got the power!
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Okay, all better now, I hope. Contemplating what's being done in our name at Guantanamo Bay. You know, it feels kind of personal. And what did UJ say about homosexuality? Icky? Yuck? Yeah, that's how I feel about violating internationally recognized standards to force-feed someone to keep them alive so that you can torment them some more. I mean, there are nurses involved with this. Why do those nurses have licenses anyway? Male or female, makes no difference. There are psychologists who've been involved with the torture and torment that goes on there. Why are they allowed to be practicing psychologists or psychiatrists anymore? You know, just another, it's just another little off-ramp or tangential effect of this developing theory I have that we are compelled by the system we live in to participate in some level of brutality in almost every instant of our lives. This is live, Isaac. It's the 23rd day of May, Thorn in the Side, Thursday. A couple of stories that have been bouncing around and reading the tweets of UJ over in Virginia reminded me that I want to get to this story. It, of course, comes out of where else, South Carolina, Stan. Which means it's going to have its own yuck, icky factor to it. A lawsuit has been filed there a couple of weeks ago by the parents of a child that they adopted. The lawsuit is against the state of South Carolina, the South Carolina Department of Social Services, various and sundry social workers and doctors. At issue is the fact that a child was born intersexed, meaning that the child, who is now 8 years old, was born with both male and female sex organs. At the age of 16 months, 1 year and 4 months old, the child, who was in the care, custody, and control of the state of South Carolina because parental rights had been terminated. His father, the child's father, had abandoned him, and the mother was deemed unfit. The state of South Carolina had custody of this child, and at the age of 16 months, a decision was made to put the child through sex reassignment surgery. At 16 months. The doctors performed surgery on the child's penis to make it more like a clitoris. And castrated him. And then fashioned labia and whatever passes for a vagina in a 16-month-old. This means that at no point in the process did anyone stand up and say, no, you can't do this. This child has a right to make certain decisions for him or herself, and you're taking those decisions away. The child is 8 years old. And has been genitally mutilated for all intents and purposes. And is developing more or less as a male. Who has had the secondary sexual characteristics of a female imposed upon him. Now, this, of course, is not any sort of a commentary on whether or not someone with gender dysphoria should ever have sex reassignment surgery. It's done rather frequently, I suppose, these days. And for many, it is a profound relief. But this child didn't get to make that decision. Pam Crawford is the mother of the child. She said, "It's become more and more difficult as his identity has become more clearly male. The idea that mutilation has been done to him has become more and more real. There was no medical reason that this decision had to be made at that time. There was no threat to his life. I would never have made the decision to choose the gender either way." The legal staff of the Southern Poverty Law Center filed the case on the child and the parents' behalf. The lawyer is Alistair Idelson. He said, "No one advocated for MC," that's the initials by which the child is referred to in the suit papers, "no one advocated for MC's right to be free from unnecessary medical intervention at a time when the state was entrusted with his safety and well-being." It is high time all involved answer for the needless injury they inflicted on MC. There were social workers, there were physicians and nurses. Presumably there were lawyers, a judge somewhere along the way. And not one person said stop. Not one person said wait. Not one person said maybe this is a decision the child should be able to make when that child reaches an age to make it. The child's 8 years old now, and you would not, no system would let an 8 year old make a gender reassignment decision. At 16 months, then, what business did they have making it for him or her? Sixteen-month-olds just don't have a whole lot of sexuality. But this is South Carolina we're talking about. Where issues of sexuality cause profound discomfort anyway. I mean, you know, the Deep South is kind of a hung-up sort of place, if you know what I mean. And the women folk are supposed to be the women folk, and the men folk are supposed to be the men folk. And what? Some social worker in South Carolina said, "Well, we've got this little old child here, and he's got a thing, and a hoo-hoo, well, we just don't know what to do. We got to, let's lop that thing off." You know, 16 months old, he won't ever even know he's been lopped on. I hope that these parents get a giganto verdict, because the child's going to need a lot. I mean, it's weird enough. Puberty? If I had a time machine, you would have to point a gun at me, and maybe even, well, or you know, spear point or something, to go back and go through that again. And to go through it this way? Why not let people make decisions for themselves? This is the same kind of thinking that a few generations ago resulted in involuntary sterilizations. And lobotomies. Lottie pointing out to me via the chat room, it isn't a question of sexuality. It's been common practice in cases of ambiguous genitalia to surgically correct them to the closest sexuality they resemble, even if it turns out to be wrong. So that was done a little less than 7 years ago. And the mom and the dad are trying to be decent parents. But it's South Carolina. What if more medical intervention is necessary? What then? Because, you know, they love them some free market down in South Carolina, and they're not about it. No easy access to health care for this child. What if some sort of hormone replacement therapy is warranted? It's just a brutal story. And, you know, I understand what Lottie says when he thinks it's not, and he says it's not just South Carolina. But it is South Carolina. Would this have been done in a more enlightened state? We don't know. But it was done in South Carolina. Move one state northward, and you wind up in, of course, North Carolina. Another one of those havens of freedom protecting, right? Got to protect freedom. Naturally, the only way you can do that is with a firearm. Randolph County, North Carolina, which is, I guess Asheboro is a city there. This past Saturday, a toddler, 2-year-old, wandered into mommy and daddy's room and found mommy and daddy's freedom protecting firearm. That's when the 2-year-old put the muzzle of the gun in his mouth and pulled the trigger. The child was reported in critical condition but is expected to survive. Randolph County Sheriff's Office Captain Derek Hill said, "The bullet missed all the vital arteries there in the neck and the head and also missed the spinal cord, so I said it's a miracle the child is still with us." A neighbor explained, the good Lord was looking after him. Which, of course, means that the good Lord was not looking after the 2-year-old who was shot by her 5-year-old brother and killed with the Keystone Arms Cricket My First 22 rifle over in Kentuckystan. Arbitrary and capricious, to say the very least, that good Lord. A decision has not been made, as far as I know, as to whether or not the parents will be charged with leaving the firearm unattended, you know, by way of some sort of abuse or neglect of the child. You know what? As parents of a 2-year-old, I'll bet they would never leave a razor-sharp chef's knife just sitting around the kitchen. I'll bet they've got those little caps, the little caps that you put in electrical outlets to block them if they're not in use. I'll bet they've got some of those, too. I'll bet they've got baby gates. But, well, them freedom-protecting firearms is a different story, ain't it? Mercifully, the child will survive. America, what a country. Right? Yeah. 304-658-3333 is the phone number. The Skype line is Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. If you want to jump in on this Thorn in the Side Thursday, let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, good afternoon, Bob.
Well, hey, Kevin, how are you?
Long time no talk to.
You've been on the road, I trust.
Yep, on the road and in the air and south of the border. Glad to be back on this side of the border where some sort of common sense prevails.
Really? You're somewhere that common sense prevails? Where?
Yeah, well, Colorado Springs. There's at least 40% of us here in the Springs that believe that freedom-protecting guns should be placed in areas where children should not be able to have access to them. And so I'm extremely happy to be back home where I don't have to listen to Fox News every night, because listening to Fox News, when I did listen to it, was quite the interesting display of non-journalism. It's gotten worse instead of better since the last time I visited Florida and was subjected to it. I'm just amazed at how it's just gotten so out of control.
Were you a little nervous down there?
No, nervous wasn't the right word. Well, nervous in the sense that I gave a lot of thought to what would happen if for some reason I got trapped down there. And by that I mean if something happened to where I couldn't make it back to my humble little abode here. Because down in parts of the south there, it's just gotten completely out of control. Listening to all the stories of the Benghazi and all the other scandals, you would think that President Obama was...
The devil himself?
Well, worse than. I think, you know, if they had an election and the devil was one candidate and Barry Obama was the other one, they would vote for the devil.
Yeah.
The better of the lesser of two evils, so to speak. And it just, you know, it's like a feeding frenzy down there with all these supposed scandals. I know voice that I heard anyway, except maybe on the NPR stations, but no other side, you know, no progressive stations that I heard that might give you the other side of the story, or even at least attempt to point out that there may be another side to the story. The local station that my mom and dad listened to the most for news, I would have rated them, if not the best station in the area, one of the best for journalism. And about 20 years ago, they switched over to being a Fox affiliate. And for a long time, they still had quite good journalistic ethics. You know, it may have said Fox in the title, but they still adhered to good journalistic ideals. And that's completely gone out of the window. I just couldn't believe how far this station has sunk to new lows. There was very few stories that I heard that there wasn't some sort of editorializing or in some way, fashion, or form getting in their opinion instead of just reporting the news. And so, yeah, I'm glad to be back here where I can pick out the stations I want to listen to, pick out the news I want to listen to, and be able to listen to The Horn and Rick Smith and Dr. Bill and Mike Moy and, you know, have some sort of sense of, yeah, we don't like President Obama for a lot of the decisions he's made, but you know what? At least we can look at both sides of the story and decide what we're going to think about a particular issue instead of some news station telling me how I should think about the issue. So, it was really quite the experience, and I find the most disconcerting thing to me, Bob, is I find that every time I go back there, it gets harder, not easier. And so I don't know what that means for the next time I go back. If I go back, I'm sure there will, for whatever reason, be a time that I will have to go back, but don't want to. And so I got in yesterday about 4:15 our time, but by the time I got home, I think there was like 15 minutes left in the show. So I don't even think I turned on the dial. I listened to a little bit of the show on the replay that you do, that's on the White Rose Society feed after the Moy show. But I didn't listen to the Moy show either. You know, it was like, I just was glad to be back home, Bob. Bottom line. I didn't need to hear any show as much as I needed to feel like I was back where I belonged. And by that, I'm not talking about a city as much as I'm talking about it as lifestyle, you know. So,
mindset, attitude.
Hear your voice. Let me ask, because of the tornado there in Oklahoma and Texas, and I take it all the Horn family is doing okay?
To the best of my knowledge, yes.
Yeah, good, because,
I immediately checked over on Bart Kopp's page, too, and he was about 100 miles from Moore, I guess. He's up in Tulsa. You worry about things like that.
Well, you know, that's another interesting thing, too, because this outbreak of tornadoes is about a month late. We usually get those outbreaks in April.
Or even March.
And then, it wasn't consecutive 7 days, but I'd say out of the 15 days I was in Florida, at least half that time, it was warmer here in Colorado Springs than it was in Florida. I was thinking to myself, it's almost like I was going through the mirror and ending up in a crazy mixed up world.
Yeah.
You know, Colorado Springs, 7,000 feet up. It's only mid-May, but it was warmer here than it was in Tampa.
Wow.
Yeah. It just was unbelievable. And they don't connect. And by they, I mean conservatives in general do not connect that, gee, you think this might be global warming? You know, how much evidence do you need of it? Do you not understand? I think there was one day it was 96 in Minneapolis. That just doesn't happen in early mid-May, you know, very often. And then you get an F5 tornado like what you got there in Oklahoma. You know, what else can you say? That, to me, it's fairly obvious that storm was fed, so to speak, by the continued global warming and continued disruption of the climate, but doesn't connect with the neocons down south. You know, it's just like, oh, well, it's just a cycle. Well, okay. The cycle's been going on for about 15 years now, and every time they do a study, they say that this particular year was warmer than the last year, and that hasn't changed now for about 15 or so years. You know, so it's just, I'm glad to be young. That's the best way I can put it. And glad to be able to listen to Bob, because back home I didn't have any access to the internet whatsoever back in Tampa. And so very glad to be able to listen.
We're glad you made it back home safe and sound.
That's pretty much all I wanted to say. I just, it's kind of odd calling in on a Thursday and saying, I'm glad to be listening again, coming home on a Wednesday evening like that, instead of starting the week afresh, so to speak. But I'll take it. If I had to come home and turn on your show at midnight our time tonight to be able to listen, I would have done it, because you just want to be able to hear fellow progressives. And I very much miss that, because there were none to be found. I'm sure they're there, but I didn't run into any progressives while I was down there in Florida. And so I just am glad to be back listening to the Horn family, and my thoughts and concerns were with those that we know are down in the Tornado Alley area. It was very hard just getting that story over the national media without actually hearing, you know, a little bit of a local flavor to it. Colorado being one state over from Oklahoma, even since I've been back home, you get a little bit better picture of what's going on there, even through our local media. So, anyway.
Indeed. Glad to have you home and glad to hear back from you. In fact, I was wondering just a couple of days ago how long you were going to be down there.
Well, I wanted, you know, my thought was to try to listen to your show via the landline at some point during that 2 weeks and one day, but I guess the best way to put it is that things were just a little bit too emotional. Is not the right word, but you get the idea.
Charged.
Disassociate's not the right word either, but close enough. Kind of just, you know, disassociate myself from all the politics. I don't know how many times, especially in the first week, I bit my tongue. I'm amazed I still got one. And at some point during the end of the first week, I just decided, you know, you just gotta ignore it. And, you know, try not to bring up politics. Don't, you know, just visit and enjoy the family for the family and take the politics out of it. And that's basically what I did for the second week. But, with about 3 or 4 days left before I came back, I was starting to count down the hours. You know, 96 hours to go, 95 hours to go, you know, that kind of thing. And I wish it weren't that way. I would very much like to be able to enjoy family for the good that my family has. But all too often, politics some way, not by me, but politics is brought into that. And there's no sense even trying to discuss it, because in their minds, you're dead wrong. And so, you know, there's no sense in even trying.
Well, look, this goes a long, long way back, but our old buddy and horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner wrote a book one time called Fox News Shared Psychotic Disorder Syndrome, Fox Syndrome. And he argues, and I think compellingly so, that long-term exposure to Fox, or what we call Radio Rwanda, actually does long-term damage to the human brain. And so that probably explains some of what you experienced.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for that, because one of the statements I heard while I was down there was Fox was the only station that told the truth. And I wanted to say something, but knew better. I couldn't say that about the most progressive station in America, that they're the only station that tells the truth. Life isn't like that, you know.
Right.
You don't take any news source and assume that that's the only truth that's out there. And I wouldn't call Fox listeners, I wouldn't label them as being a cult, but I would say there are cultish aspects to it. And the gentleman you were mentioning that wrote the book, I'd like to see if there's a book out there on how to talk in a rational, civil manner to try and...
I don't know if that's even possible.
Well, the thought comes to my mind, if it's not possible, we're really in trouble, because...
Well, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is that's the kind of thing that you have to come to by yourself.
Yeah.
If at all. Because, and it, you know, Kevin, I've got the rule here, no right-wingers.
Right.
And that's because I feel like people are supporting this with their kind contributions, and I'm guessing people don't want to tune in and hear another wingnut. Because there are a million different outlets for that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, I really don't try anymore. I just don't. And I figure, you know, one of these days, if it turns out their ox is getting gored, maybe they'll figure it out. I think the odds are very long against that, though.
Probably. It was really one of the other interesting things I saw down there, Bob, is that Republicans are a little bit ticked off at Rick Scott for some of the decisions he's made lately, which have a little bit of rationality to them, and they really can't handle that. This is a Republican governor. He's not supposed to be making decisions like this. And isn't that what a governor's job is to make decisions based on the good of their state, not on politics, but for the good of the state?
I think that probably works that way in theory, Kevin, but in practice, not so much anymore. I mean, look at what happened in Oklahoma, and this isn't even related to the tornadoes. There was a program there that provided health insurance to people who were very, 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 very poor.
Yep.
And the governor, who was a Republican, said she wanted to figure out a way to make sure that that funding stayed in place.
Yep.
The Speaker of the House, however, said, oh, hell no, I'm not even going to bring it up. It is not our job to take care of people.
Yep.
Now, in that little bitty moment, Kevin, you get exposed to the heart and soul of the problem with Republicans and government. They don't believe in it. They don't think it should. They don't think it should exist. They really are the worst sort of anarcho-capitalists.
Yep.
They see the only purpose of government as being making things better, life better, for corporations, plutocrats, oligarchs, and whatnot, and the rest of us can just go pound sand.
Yep. And that's the hardest thing for me to understand is the guy in Florida who's working for $7.25 an hour, has no benefits, but says, I've got to vote Republican because my religion tells me that I should be voting Republican. And I'm like, really? you know, you have no benefits. If you got sick today, you're wiped out if you're able to get any health care. And the Obamacare at least makes the attempt at making sure you've got some kind of health care in place. But you're going to go against that because some religious nut wing who's got millions of dollars tells you that depending on the government for your health care is bad. You know, I don't have anyone in my family, per se, other than one crazy cousin that's in that situation. But I've seen it enough down there, heard people talk about it, and it blows my mind. You know, how people can totally disassociate their lack of being able to be involved in a meaningful way in society because they have no money and living the lifestyle of a second-class citizen because some neocon fascist tells them that Obamacare is bad for them because it provides for preventative medicine, you know, and gives them a chance at least the chance of maybe preventing a disease from occurring and catching it early. And I never have understood that, but it's one of those things that, like I said, I just go back to being so excited to be able to be back in my little comfort zone with progressives that I can talk to, agree with, disagree with, and do it in a civil manner and be able to have a discussion. Because down there in the South, you can't have a discussion. It's my way or the highway. And that goes for the 20th tier right-wing talk show host right on up the line. And, you know, I found myself sometimes wanting to pull out my hair listening to some of the garbage that was on the radio. And, of course, I didn't listen to it for maybe 10, 15 seconds, but what I heard scared the heck out of me most of the time. So, you know, I'm very relieved to be back home. Where I am now, there's lots of things that could be that I could do or could be done to improve my situation here, but my situation here is heaven compared to what it would be were I living down south. And that sounds odd when you live in Colorado Springs to say that, but there's liberals out here. Colorado's a blue state. Springs may be a little bit of a red area, but we've at least got 40% progressives down here that I can, you know, enjoy being around and getting into those discussions and getting involved in the politics of trying to do good for society, because that's not politics. That's doing things to improve society. And, you know, I don't know any other way to put it other than to say I am extremely glad to be back where I feel like I've got a chance. And, you know, wouldn't have that down there.
No.
So, you know, I had to call in and say, man, I'm glad to hear your voice.
Well, I appreciate it, Kevin.
What it comes down to.
I appreciate it. I really, really do. And we're all glad to know you're home safe and sound.
Yep, and I want to just thank everyone. I got a couple notes from a few people before I left from the Horn family wishing me a good trip and such, and I just want to thank everybody for that, too, and for their thoughts. So, made it back home safely, and we'll continue to move forward. So, to borrow a phrase from a besieged president right now, and so, you know, that's about all I got to say. I am so glad to be back, being able to listen to the horn, and look forward to the rest of the calls tonight. So,
all right, good deal.
So until next week, I'll let you go, Bob, and thank you very much.
All right, Kevin, you have a wonderful evening. Welcome home.
You too, Bob. Thank you.
Bye now. Our good buddy Kevin, back home in Colorado Springs. There can be some culture shock involved in going down to one of the stand states, because you have this sort of intellectual understanding of how weird it can be, but then you go and you find out that no matter how weird you thought it was going to be, it's weirder. Going back to what Kevin was talking about, climate change and tornadoes and whatnot, on his page today, Bart Kopp made a couple of remarks about the tornadoes, and I think it really captures the essence of things. He says, talking about Oklahoma, he says, now people are saying, why would you live there? Well, until very recently, the tornadoes weren't that bad. You hid in the closet, and if things went really wrong, you maybe lost your roof. Now the damn things strip the bark off effing trees. Did you see they found some stainless steel highway guardrail wrapped around a pole? Think, that long, thin stainless steel strip has almost no wind resistance, yet the tornado tore the stainless steel off its 3/4-inch bolts, and I would have bet that was impossible. Yeah, me too. It's not that there are tornadoes or not tornadoes. It is that this falls very neatly into the predictions that were made decades ago, that weather events would become more frequent and more powerful. The hurricanes would be bigger, the tornadoes stronger, the blizzards deeper, the floods floodier. And it's what we're seeing. I ran across a story earlier today about an Arctic data collection station run by Russia. And they had to bug out, because the giant ice floe that they had it parked on began to melt and disintegrate. Now, being Russians, you can kind of presume that they are familiar with how to deal with the cold and how to deal with, you know, the Arctic. And you don't just, I tend to think they wouldn't just randomly put an Arctic data gathering operation on a piece of ice that they thought would, no. But it is now being said very, very plainly that by 2030, the Arctic ice cap may be just gone. Just gone. And that means something for the rest of us. You don't have to go to the frozen north to recognize the fact that we need it. You don't have to go to the South Pole to recognize that we need it. You don't have to go to the Amazon to recognize that the Amazon plays a vital role in the transpiration, respiration, whatever systems of global climatary systems. On the other hand, over at Radio Rwanda, it's all a vicious hoax perpetrated by liberals to try to get a carbon tax? Isn't that what Alex Jones said the other day? This is all just about trying to get a carbon tax? Isn't that kind of a stupid way to go about it? And can we now, do we now realize that whether it be the Wall Street Journal or Newsmuck or a member of the Senate or the House, when they say things like climate change is not real, they are in bed with Alex Jones. And doesn't that sort of destroy their credibility? I would be inclined to think so. But who knows? Meanwhile, since we're talking about the natural world, this little snippet. And it's, this is why we care about the little things in our world. Of an evening now, this time of year, you can go outside here and you can hear the song, if we can use that word, you can hear the song of the peepers. And it's just a beautiful, cheerful little noise that speaks somehow of life and abundance and procreation, and because they're just itsy bitsy little tiny tree frogs out there just peeping their little hearts out, looking, I suppose, to get laid, because it's spring. And to have those sounds go away, well, it would be more than an aesthetic that was lost. It would be a road mark, a roadside marker on our own extinction. At least that's what it looks like some scientists are beginning to point out. You know, scientists came into the mountaintop removal areas of southern West Virginia and Appalachia, and they said, you know, when you do mountaintop removal, you lose all of your marker species. Your mayflies. They go away. The coal industry immediately latched onto that and said, them damn tree huggers, they care more about some damn bug than they do about our jobs. When in fact, pointing out the decline of marker species is pointing out the decline of we ourselves. But they lack, no, they don't lack it. It's just, it's over, it's drowned out by the happy jingling sound of corporate profits. Because see, a coal company doesn't give a damn about the people that work for it. They trot out that jobs argument to advance their own agenda. But yeah, the mayflies go away. The little fish in the little streams, the ones that survive, wind up growing with crooked spines, three eyes, two heads, all kinds of bizarre malformations. And then this latest. A study by the U.S. Geological Survey that came to the conclusion that here in North America, frogs and toads and other amphibious creatures are going extinct so quickly, disappearing so quickly, that they are on a track to complete extinction from their natural habitats by 2033. Jesus, that's only 20 years from now. Those little peepers singing so joyfully in the warming spring dusk. The amphibian populations are disappearing from North America at a rate of 3.7% per year. Some of them, however, that are particularly threatened are expected to be extinct from their natural habitats inside of 6 years from now. Aaron Muths is a biologist and told the Denver Post, even in what we consider pristine areas, we are seeing amphibian decline. If anything is doing poorly in an area we think is protected, that says something about our level of protection and about what may be happening outside those areas. The USGS study didn't talk about causation. It was merely quantification of the loss. Other studies have tried to determine why the losses are occurring, and they cite competition, predation, reproduction and disease, human-induced stresses like habitat destruction, environmental contamination, invasive species, and climate change. The amphibians are a good marker because they are particularly susceptible to external stressors, environmental poisons. A co-author of the USGS study is Stephen Korn, and he said, amphibians are going, but a lot of other species are going too. Snakes are declining. Mammals are declining. We're seeing bird declines. Amphibians are probably declining at a faster rate than other groups, and they may be a little more sensitive. Amphibious species are a good example of the collapse of the world's ecosystems that we seem to be seeing right now. We're seeing a lot of species in a lot of places declining at the same time. But, you know, that's just God's plan. That's not anything we're doing. Because what did some right-wing asshat say? It's extremely proudful to think that puny little us humans could affect God's creation. Once the sweet birds sang, right? It's the title of a science fiction novel, a futuristic thing I read as a teenager. It was kind of horrifying. I don't think I knew the word dystopian at the time, but it certainly was dystopian. And yet, you know, we can just blow on past it. Just ignore it. Claim that it's not real. How many of us live in places where you would even notice? If the peepers went away. I don't even know if I would. Except every spring when I hear them again, I think, how lovely. The peepers are back. Phone lines are open if you want to get in on the conversation. 304-658-3333. The Skype line is Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. If you want to get in that way, that, of course, is free as can be. We'll take a little break and come back for the third hour on this Thorn in the Side Thursday. We call what we do here conversation radio. And it's a lot more fun when you were participating in it. We'll be back. I'm Bob Kincaid.
In the year 2525, if man is still alive, if woman can survive, they may find. In the year 3535, gonna need to tell the truth, tell no lies. Everything you think, do, and say is in the pill you took today. In the year 4545, ain't gonna need your teeth, won't need your eyes. You won't find a thing to choose. Nobody's gonna look at you. In the year 5555. Come and he ought to make
been 10,000 years, man has cried a billion tears for what he never knew. Now man's reign is through, but through eternal night, the twinkling of starlight, so very far away, maybe it's only yesterday. In the year 2525, if man is still alive, if woman can survive, they may
find. Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
I love the synchronicity that takes place here in the Horn family commune. I just got the same story from two different people, more than 1,000 miles apart. Got Isaac up in Ohio and Texas Betsy, obviously, in, well, you know, Texas. Both sending to me and both horrified by another one of those roadside marker stories for America. You know, remember the story of the fire department that showed up and watched the guy's house burn down in Tennessee because he didn't pay his fire service fees? Well, this is like that, only worse. Josephine County, Oregon. About 10 months ago, a woman calls 911 for help because her violent and abusive boyfriend, ex-boyfriend, was trying to break in her home where she was. And so she did what any normal person would do. She called 911 to get some law enforcement help. Now, obviously Josephine County, Oregon is not Cotati, California, where the cops show up and bust down your door for telling them that they need a warrant before they can come in your house. And then they tase you two or three times. And your spouse or significant other. Right. A few weeks before the call took place, the woman had gotten out of the hospital having been put there by this self-same individual. So she called 911. And while she was on the line with the dispatcher, she said, "He's trying to break in. He's hurt me before. He's and what's the quote? If he gets in, I'm done." So as he's trying to pry the door open, the dispatcher tells her, "I don't have anybody to send out there. You know, obviously, if he comes inside the residence and assaults you, can you ask him to go away? Do you know if he's intoxicated or anything?" Once again, it's unfortunate you guys don't have any law enforcement out there. The first 911 dispatcher booted her over to state police dispatch, who said, "No, we can't send anybody." Josephine County Sheriff Gil Gilberson explained it to Oregon Public Radio this way. There isn't a day that goes by that we don't have another victim. If you don't pay the bill, you don't get the service. Now, why was there no one to send to her rescue? The short answer is Republicans. This woman was assaulted not just by a violent ex-boyfriend. She was assaulted by conservatism and austerity. In Josephine County, Oregon, they used to have a multi-million dollar federal law enforcement subsidy, a grant. But when it went away, 23 deputies got canned. The entire major crimes unit got shut down. That left them with 6 deputies to cover the entirety of Josephine County, Oregon. All that teabag and palaver about how we got to deal with the deficit and we're stealing money from people. That's what taxes is. That's stealing money from people. Right? This is that. To a T. In fact, that very argument was used recently by a member of the House of Representatives from Tennessee, naturally, where they let houses burn down in some places. He cited a Bible verse. This Tennessee Republican did. Representative Stephen Fincher. He was discussing the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, otherwise known as food stamps, and said he was all for cutting the daylights out of that. And in doing so, he cited 2 Thessalonians 3:10. For even when we were with you, we gave you this command. Anyone unwilling to work should not eat. So Stephen Fincher just assumes that if you need food assistance in this country, it must be because you're not working. And that's kind of, it's understandable coming from Stephen Fincher. Because, see, he's a grifter. He's never had to worry about food insecurity. A phrase that we throw around now that actually means starvation. Because he has made millions of dollars via the farm bill. He's been given money because he's a farmer. The one who is unwilling to work shall not eat. And describes the SNAP program as stealing from people to feed other people. Interestingly, however, He is among the biggest recipient of farm money in the history of the state of Tennessee. Between 1999 and 2012, he got $3.48 million of your money. At one point, the government just wrote him a check for $70,000. It's called a direct payment. And you get it even if you don't show need for it. He got that last year, 2012. A Tennessean who needs food stamps gets, on average, $1,586.40 per year. In one check, Representative Stephen Fincher, Christian, got $70,000. He said, the role of citizens, of Christians, of humanity is to take care of each other, but not for Washington to steal from those in the country and give it to others in the country. Unless they're giving it, of course, to him. So we'll let people go hungry in this country. We will let women be raped. But Stephen Fincher has to get his money. The 911 dispatcher was on the phone with the woman in Josephine County, Oregon, for 10 minutes before the rape began. Once again, it's unfortunate you guys don't have any law enforcement out there. After he committed the rape, the Oregon State Police arrested him. I try to be more than ever careful about using the word rape. It's extremely sickening when I see quotes from people like the Beckerhead saying, with Benghazi and the IRS, America just got raped. No. Rape is a very specific word with a specific meaning. But in this instance, this woman in Oregon who really did get raped got raped by a thug of an ex-boyfriend. I suppose she is what we would call lucky still to be alive. But truly, she also got raped by the likes of Stephen Fincher and John Boner and Eric Cantor and Louis Gohmert and Michelle Bachmann and Steve King and Paul Brown and Jack Kingston and you get the idea. By Ted Cruz, by Marco Rubio, by Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. Because the Republican Party would rather see a woman raped than have the wealthiest among us pay a decent share of their income in taxes that support them. And incidentally, occasionally, help to prevent a woman from being sexually brutalized. What a pity no one will say that to their faces. I mean, this program is out there, but no, what a pity that someone will not explain to Stephen Fincher that he is, in fact, an empowerer of rapists, an empowerer of starvation, an empowerer of misery. For the sake of his so-called immortal soul, it would be nice if some gospel sharp would say, "Listen, son, leave 2 Thessalonians alone for a little while, bub. Because right now, little devils are jumping up and down on bellows in hell, getting it extra special good hot for you, boy. And they are going to roast you on a spit and baste you in barbecue sauce. And as quick as they've eat all the meat off of your bones, it's going to grow back and they're going to do it again because it's hell, baby, and that's where you're headed." Let's go to the Skype line. Will is with us from Chicago. Hey, Will.
Hey. Hi. How are you? So, finally up such a...
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Finally up such a story that I just realized that question is maybe seen as ironic, but I think one of the things that brings us here to the horn is a sense of community. And what is very horrific in this story is it seems there is almost no sense of community where that woman lives in trying to have basic safety, basic public service, what some call the commons or the common good. It's just that we know that when police services are cut, crime goes up. The cops are generally not popular with most people, but darn it, like the fire department, when we need them, we need them.
Absolutely, and this was an instance where a crime could have been prevented. You know, the police are generally not, and this is not a criticism of police. It's more of an observation, Will, of just the way things work in this world. They're not very good at crime prevention.
No, that's not their role. I don't think any society has really come up with a formal agency that deals with crime prevention, unless you're talking about psychiatrists and social welfare agencies, which counsel people who could end up committing crimes, harming themselves or others. But the police are generally reactive. But the idea is you should, in this country, be able to pick up a phone and expect some level of service. I mean, the dialogue from the emergency dispatcher is almost something you would expect in a satirical, dark comedy. It's the sort of thing where you literally have to ask, is this happening in our world? And sadly, it is. I think one of the key problems I have with the Tea Party, conservatives and libertarians, is in their focus on individualism and the rights of the individual. They forget that there is also a need for community, for the common good, for the protection of everyone. This nation and no nation was built on every man, woman, and child for himself or herself. But rather, if you look at any of the founding documents of this country, there was a sense about setting up a society because one person can't do everything in a society. There's always going to be specialization, including law enforcement. And I have to say that if we look at the priority of the Tea Party budget, particularly the poll, as expressed by Paul Ryan, we have to ask, does this serve the needs of the community or the needs of a few individuals? And it looks like it's the needs of a few very wealthy individuals. Thank you very much.
Indeed, indeed, and you know, if you, I heartily encourage you, Will, if you get the chance, to, if you can't listen live, then check out Dr. Bill in podcast form or whatever, because, you know, the kind of community that they set out to set up, is open to debate, and he's been going into some of that lately. There was a lot of self-interest running around in that constitutional convention. But even then, the rich understand that they have the greatest, most vested interest in seeing a in having a stable society, because it has a way of working its way up the ladder to them if they don't.
Exactly. And this is something that the founders, as divided as they were, as divided as Jefferson and Madison and Adams and Hamilton could be, they at least understood there was a need for a stable society where there could at least be some degree of changes made. They might have differed on the sorts of changes that were needed, but now we seem to have what I will call it a thought virus, where we have people who are almost arguing against the existence of any society. I mean, the extreme libertarians, if you ask them, will
be... And that goes back to the correction that Jan gave me last night, writing from the UK. Maggie Thatcher's famous quote, "There is no such thing as community."
Maggie Thatcher failed sociology 101 because societies have been, and communities have been observed for tens of thousands of years. And some of those cultures, by the way, have persisted for tens of thousands of years. Do you think that the sand in the Kalahari Desert are the people sometimes called the Bushmen, or many of the Australian Aboriginal peoples would have, or our own Native American peoples would have been able to persist without having a sense of community? I mean, good heavens. I believe that the individual is important, but I also believe that I as an individual am part of something larger than myself. Call it my community. Call it my city, my state, my nation, my world, the universe.
I'm not even sure at this point in time, Will, I'm not sure that I even acknowledge or believe in the concept of the individual as it is espoused or expressed by the baggers and the birthers and the deathers and the tenthers and the various and sundry booger eaters. You know,
they have myth.
Yeah, it is. It's like some sort of an origin myth that rugged individuals were out wandering around and just happened to band together temporarily to form a country, and that's us, and bootstraps and rising tides and boats and all manner of bilious crap. Even the lone wolf, okay? Because that's a phrase that gets bandied about. There's no such thing as a lone wolf. A lone wolf that gets cast out of the pack becomes, in rather short order, a dead wolf.
Exactly. I mean, here, as someone who has actually read dealt a lot with dogs and read a little bit on wolves when encountering some scientific literature on them, it is remarkable how everyone in a wolf pack has a place, and there's a sense of loyalty to the pack. In a very good science fiction novel by Gordon R. Dixon, a man in an America that collapsed because the economy went under is somewhat adopted by a semi-tame wolf, and he realizes that when a bear attacked him, the wolf wasn't so much protecting him as him, but the person he considered his packmate. And if you look at primates, our nearest relatives, the chimpanzees and bonobos, they're all about societies and a community. But again, suggesting to a teabagger that we are even animals would be offensive. I mean, last I checked, Bob, no one listening to the horn qualified as a plant or a fungus.
Or even a mineral.
Or even in a mineral, though maybe we have a few listeners with the name Stoner Irons there on the internet. But seriously, I have to ask myself if we have the equivalent of a virus in the minds of people, which are forcing them to see themselves so much as individuals, they forget the rest of the world exists. And we see this in politics. We see this in the community where the poor woman was attacked. And we see it in climate change where we have people think, oh, I can do what I want. What I do has no impact. The earth is infinite. Oh, or the world is coming to an end soon. See James Watt, Reagan's, one of Reagan's.
Dim leader.
Yeah.
What history thinks doesn't matter because we'd all be dead.
Yes. But as I like to say, this is foolish. I have been fortunate enough, even with all the things I'm dealing with, in terms of finding work, to have seen lots of different parts of the country and be amazed by its beauty. Even in the Chicago suburbs, I've seen things very, very beautiful. And the thought that we are going to leave our children a denuded environment is depressing. And in the chat room early, and I do urge people to participate in the chat room as well as to donate to the Horn, because there is nothing else quite like this out there, five nights a week. I have seen things of great beauty, and I asked myself, asked in the chat room, maybe in the future, in the next few centuries, we'll have to terraform Earth. I mean, consider this. If we lose the ice cap at the North Pole, this is something that has not occurred while human beings have existed in our current form as a species. Maybe we have to go back to Homo heidelbergensis about 400,000 years ago or even earlier. But why should we play games with the only habitable planet we know of in this universe? It's folly. And I think if somehow I can do a Buck Rogers, fall asleep for 500 years, and our civilization endures, I would find future history books very critical of many of the decisions of our time and many of the attitudes. But what I would hope to find is that, and gradually, people woke up, took a stand, and made the changes that were necessary to survive. And in the end, I think it's up to us, because the only way I think we see change in this country or this world are through mass movements. We might, every now and then, be lucky and get inspired social leaders such as King and Gandhi, or very good politicians such as FDR. But we have to remember that even the best leader without support is not going to be able to get things done. And I think what I hope that we saw with Occupy Wall Street was perhaps the first glimmers of a dawn of change. We have to make change, because I don't want to see a future where literally it looks like a dystopian science fiction movie where there's no hope for a better world, and people seriously wonder if in the next 100 years we will be rendered extinct, possibly save for a few colonies on the moon or somewhere else. And to think of all the things that we could have lost in the past, and we have seen great civilizations fall. If we squander all that we have on this earth, the richness of our cultural heritage, the beauty of this earth, if anything is a sin, it would be that. We owe it to ourselves. We owe it to our children. We owe it to the people who inspired us to build a better world, because if we don't, who will? And it's going to be hard work, but perhaps there's no better work for us to do in this life.
I think there's a lot of truth in what you say.
It's not going to be easy.
No, it's not. And for me, the question is not, is it going to be easy? The question is it going to be possible? And I don't want to be fatalistic and nihilistic, but the big question now is, how do we overcome, Will? How do we overcome the money and the mindsets involved to save not just ourselves but all of us?
Yeah, I think it's a key question.
You know, you mentioned at some point we may have to terraform Earth. I didn't chuckle because there's truth in it, but of primary concern in that is inside the mythology that the baggers and the polluters and the poisoners adhere to is an assumption that if a problem comes along, well, you know, we will just, science and technology will figure out a way to get around it. And this has been, you know, this has been referenced a couple of times in the last few nights on the show. Program. Sorry. And I suppose, you know, I suppose it's possible, but what are the odds? I don't know about you, but daggum, I want to go to this tornado steering school that Alex Jones is talking about. I mean, that's better than learning to drive a race car.
Yeah, I was going to say, Alex Jones has almost descended into the level of imagining that Lex Luthor is a billionaire who's out to stop Superman. This is about how absurd they are getting. That's going to be something we can struggle against. And I think one of the things that gives me hope is if I look back on our history, things like the civil rights movement, the women's suffrage movement, the populist and progressive movements of the late 1800s or 1900s, they were able to overcome a lot. I've sometimes referred to our era as Gilded Age 2.0, because we could easily draw a picture of Senators Inhofe and Coburn as money bags with the names of various petroleum companies on them, which echoes back to a popular cartoon of the late 1800s. I think we can overcome this. It's going to take organization. There's a good article I read in Alternate that ran a year ago, 6 people you need to start a revolution, and stress that you need just not the social movement, that you need intellectuals, you need insiders who can tell us what the people in power are thinking, various others. You can Google that. Who has a show on Blog Talk Radio did an interview with Robinson. I don't know if you want me to mention the site.
I don't care.
DemocracyInteractive.com. They interviewed her this past Sunday, and she has a lot of critiques on our current politics, but also says that in the long run, it is possible to make change. And if we think about it, we have seen it more recently. Consider that several of the regimes in Eastern Europe that were part of the Eastern Bloc came to an end through peaceful change and protest. The Berlin Wall fell. My father was alive at the time, and he was stunned, since he feared that we would ultimately have the confrontation between East and West that would end in nuclear fire. And yet, we have to remember ourselves. Change is possible, but it begins with us. Do not expect a political messiah. In fact, there's a very old story in the Talmud about a guy who's planting a tree, and his neighbor comes up to him and says, "Look, the Messiah has come. We should go and greet him." And the man keeps on digging in the dirt, planting that tree, finishes planting it, pats down the mud, and says, "Okay, let's go off to meet the Messiah." Meaning, he had a certain degree of skepticism. The idea is we do the work, and if there's some great historical figure who comes along who can help us move us on the way, great, let's greet him, let's check him out to see if he's real. But the work on the ground, the work that you and others with the AK Act are doing, and many others are doing on many issues in different communities throughout this world, is what's needed. In the end, I think we're going to have to count as money with people power, because a lot of those in power are just happy with the status quo. And it's kind of like a lobster in a pot of heating water. They are just content, and they do not notice everything is wrong until it's far too late. So I have some hope. Am I very concerned about what's going on in this world and the cult of extreme individualism as expressed by the Tea Party and the denial that we have serious environmental and social problems? Yes, I am. But I have to have faith that we can address it, because we have done so in the past. The question is, what sort of future do we want? One where in perhaps 500 years, people will say they were serious problems, but they ultimately rose to the occasion, and the next several generations dealt with those problems, and perhaps a few names that we know of now, or perhaps people waiting to be born, are mentioned as heroes of those times. But I would hope the historians would point out was the common man and common woman doing the hard work and made the difference. We can perhaps have that future, or one that more resembles the Mad Max movies, which, although fun to watch, no one would want to live in.
No. And in fact, we just got a piece of commentary in here via email, Will, under the subject line, individualism. All I need is this here hatchet, this dog, my gun, and yes, my cave. Now, good night. It's 5:30 p.m., and I can't see you in here. Carl.
Yes, I was going to say, unless genetics have radically changed, he's going to need one other person to continue, because sooner or later, everyone falls sick. That's the reason we have tribes. My whole critique about the TV show Survivor when I came on was, wait, it's not individuals who should be seen as survivors, but societies. And I think we have a lot to learn from some of the traditional societies around us, and I have hope. It's a guarded hope. It's a hope that realizes if we want to get moved forward, it's going to take hard work. There will be blood, sweat, toil, and tears, to quote Churchill. And I'm afraid, like we did in the 60s, we'll probably see some good people fall along the way. But we have to move forward. We owe it to ourselves, we owe it to our children, and we owe it to the people whom we hold as heroes and inspiration. Just that, having seen the story you led off with, I must weep. I am angry. I cannot take away what happened in that county, but I can damn sure do my best to make sure that the people who do not think about what happens to the little people, as they call them, are defeated.
Well, and it needs to, I reemphasize, Will, I wasn't kidding when I said the rape was perpetrated not just by the rapist himself, but by any number of people who don't, who see this austerity as something that we need, that needs to be imposed upon us because of our profligate insistence on being safe in our homes and having food to eat.
And austerity has failed everywhere it has tried.
Keep saying that, Will, but I don't know that it has. Okay, and before people jump down my throat for saying that, let's consider who wanted it. For the people who wanted it, it's working out magnificently.
Oh yes. It's just that they might not see the rest of us as people.
Austerity politics have caused corporations in this country and around the globe to be able to hoard ungodly amounts of money.
Yes, it's more than
look at the money that Apple is sitting on. Look at Goldman Sachs, AIG, J.P. Morgan Chase, Deutsche Bank. Pick one. They're all doing fabulously well.
Exactly, and it's it's kind of a return to an almost medieval model where a few people live in luxury and the rest of us are serfs.
Yeah, the rest of us are that scene from Monty Python and the Holy Grail. You know, Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Yeah,
that's pretty much what I think some people want. My joke about Dick Cheney was he wanted to lead the committee to restore the 19th century, but I didn't know if it was the 19th century of the current era, before the current era, because I could see Dick Cheney seeing himself as a pharaoh, having such absolute power, seeing himself as a living god, while others toiled away.
The pharaoh demands a sacrifice. Peel a peasant for the peel a fellahin for the pharaoh and bring him hither quickly. Yeah, sure, absolutely.
Right, but for the masses. I've read horrific stories from Greece of increased suicides. There was a study which Tom Hartman occasionally cites, which shows that under conservative governments in Britain and Australia, the numbers of suicides have increased. If you don't have a social safety net, people will fall through it. People fall into despair. People become ill. And yet, when you don't have that social safety net, criminals will try to hurt people, and there won't be law enforcement to respond. And I think you can call this woman as much a victim of austerity as the people who have committed suicide in Greece.
I don't think there's no flaw in your reasoning. And
this
story, you know, this story made the wires. How many more? And that's one thing we're finding out. You know, you there, Will?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay. One thing we're finding out more and more, especially with like the proliferation of gun firearm disaster stories, is that for everyone that gets reported, there's a whole bunch more that don't. That was one woman in one county. Well, austerity politics didn't just hit Josephine County, Oregon.
No, it's hitting much of the nation. And just from looking at the city of Chicago itself, I could see that $100 million that the mayor wants to spend on a stadium for
a damn basketball arena team.
If you could take that $100 million, pump it into the schools, pump it into public safety and economic development, that would do infinitely more good. But I fear that in the case of many of our politicians, we have those who want to make monuments to themselves and their friends, rather like the ill-fated and short-sighted leaders of Easter Island who kept on telling people to move those stones and keep chopping those trees until the last tree fell. And then their society collapsed.
Yeah.
Let's hope we show more wisdom than the Easter Islanders and hopefully peacefully replace those short-sighted leaders with people who perhaps have something akin to the wisdom of the Five Nations of the Iroquois, the Haudenosaunee, as they call themselves, where the tradition was that leaders would try to think out the consequences of their actions for the next seven generations.
When a corporate CEO can't look beyond the next seven quarters.
Yep, that is part of the challenge. I mean, in some ways, I think our society is much like a pupa in a chrysalis after having been a caterpillar. Either it will transform or it will perish. We have to be the ones who push the transformation because it's definitely not going to come from those who are comfortable with things remaining as they are.
Nope. The status quo isn't going to be the status quo for just a whole lot longer, I don't think.
No, not at all. I mean, good heavens, when Conditions are so dire environmentally, Edward Teller's proposal of mirrors in space to redirect some of the light coming from Earth begins to seem like a sensible last-ditch effort. You know, we're in bad shape, but we can still try to limit the damage of climate change and try to build a society that is actually just, that reflects the Jeffersonian vision of people having dignity and being part of a society that insists on it. And I think we'll get there, and I think it'll be due in part to people like our audience, people like yourself, inspiring people. And let me do a quick pitch. If you can donate to the Horn, Bob could use your help, because unlike a certain loud, rude host who's on 600 plus stations, Bob is not accepting corporate money to pitch Viagra and other stuff.
Thank you, Will. Thank you kindly for that. I appreciate it.
And let's remember, we have the power to make change in our time and in ourselves. It might have seemed hopeless at times to the progressives dealing with the corrupt politics of the 1890s. It sure as heck must have seemed hopeless to people fighting apartheid and fighting racial discrimination in our own country and discrimination against women. But by perseverance, they did see change, and I have to believe we can see that too. Let them be our inspiration, and our children be what drive us forward. Peace.
Later, Will. Take care. Lots of food for thought in what Will offers in that conversation. Thank you, everyone. The show is a little bit cobbled together this evening, like I said, because I didn't expect to be here. If it has not met your standards, certainly Will did, and Kevin did, but if it's not met your standards, my apologies, and we'll do better tomorrow. Thanks, everybody, for making all of this happen. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Sparky and Lottie and Texas Betsy in the chat room, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox, to Ben Birch. Thanks to Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHEACT.org. Go to ACHEACT.org, ACHEACT.org, and learn how you can be a part of one of those transformative instances that Will was just talking about, helping us end the ongoing nightmare that persists day in and day out in Appalachia and goes by the name of mountaintop removal. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. And here comes Rick Smith on the horn.